All right. Well, good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming to the CDS results presentation. I was just telling my co-presenters that this is the first time ever we've analyzed core data in just 3 weeks. So what we're presenting today are just preliminary analyses. People are still participating in the core data survey, so we don't have our full data set quite yet. The survey period typically ends over the summertime, and we have like a long period to analyze all kinds of data and have really statistically sound, significant results for you today. But the survey period this year shifted a little bit, and so we're just giving you kind of the highlights of what we found was interesting from the new metrics that we were gathering based on the new survey questions that we had this year. So I'm Leah Lang. I manage the core data service at Educause. I'm co-presenting today with three subject matter experts. Joanna Gramma is the portfolio manager at Educause for ICAR, and she'll be talking about IT security. Sue Workman is at Indiana University, and will be talking to you about support services. And Michelle Noren is at the University of Arizona, and she'll be talking to you about research computing. So I just want to give a brief overview of what core data is in case there's any newcomers to the audience. It's a free benchmarking service. We had a little bit of a confusion amongst some of the participants this year that they thought that core data was a pay-for service, but it's not. Anyone can participate, whether you're a member of Educause or not, and we encourage everyone to use this really meaningful tool to benchmark their IT financials, staffing, and services against peer institutions. So the survey is structured in terms of the most important metrics in these areas for 10 IT domain subject areas. So we gather financial staffing and services about support, research computing, data centers, communications. We have done a lot of the survey, we've been told, is kind of like going to the dentist, where it's like really a good thing to do, but you never want to do it, and it's painful sometimes. But it's very valuable. That person who gave us that quote said it's very valuable, and you would never not participate because these are the metrics that CIOs are really using on their campuses to fight for resources at the higher level. This year, core data, like I said, the timeline shifted towards the summer months, and 751 institutions have participated this year so far, and another 131 are still working on the survey. And so this will be the most the highest amount of participation we've had in recent years, and we think that's really due to the meaningful metrics that we're now collecting in the survey. So core data has been around since 2002, and since that time, over 1,600 of all institutions have participated in the survey at least once. So if you didn't participate this year, you probably participated in the past. Our response rate for this year, the blue bars are in terms of sheer numbers of institutions, and I like to show this graph because the story about community colleges is interesting in that they're pretty on par in terms of numbers of community colleges that participate in the survey. But because there's so many community colleges in the country, their response rate is down around 15%, whereas doctoral institutions have a response rate of around 67%. So the data set for benchmarking is really rich for that section, but we'd love to have more community colleges participate so that there's more peers to compare to on that in that population. As I said earlier, today's results are based on a preliminary data set of the this was not on purpose, 666 institutions that had completed by our official deadline. And when we produce our final report in January, the results you see in that report will be based on the full data set, including the 751 that are now participating. So if you see some statistics today that are a little different in future publications, that's why. We also have some trending data that we'll be presenting today that are based on questions we've been asking for the past 3 years, and the stats that I pulled on that are based on 462 institutions that have participated in the 2011, 2012, and 2013 surveys. So We like to promote consistent participation in the survey so that we have a really rich data set for trending analysis purposes. And we're thankful for the 462 institutions that have consistently participated. So I'm going to cover the main, the core funding and staffing metrics. And then I'm going to hand off the presentation to our subject matter experts so that they can discuss what's important in the areas of support, research, computing, and IT security. Just to give you a little bit of baseline for the funding at different types of institutions. I like to show this slide. There's not much that's changing over time in terms of funding for these institutions, but as you can see, private institutions are typically funded a little bit higher than public institutions, and community colleges get a little bit less funding per FTE. This is institutional FTE, everyone on your campus, than the other types of institutions. And funding comes from a variety of different places at the university level. The highest proportion of operating appropriation is master's institutions are more often funded by operating appropriation than other types of institutions. And public doctoral institutions are getting a pretty decent chunk of chargeback funding. As compared to the other types of institutions. So as you can see, there's different funding models going on at different types of institutions. So the funding data has been collected for since the inception of the survey. What we want to do, what we want to start doing is transition the metrics that we're benchmarking to expenditure data, because we really feel that knowing where your dollars are going in terms of what services that you're spending your money on is the most important information that you should have at your fingertips. So this year we've started collecting data on expenditures. And here, so the expenditures that we're collecting are in terms of 10 kind of broad IT domain areas. And these were developed by some research that we did over the year about what are the main areas of IT and how can we break up the services that we provide. So here's a look at outsourcing and in-house spending. So this is an average across all of the 666 institutions, so this might not be definitively comparable at your institution type, but in general, about 17% of expenditures are going towards support, 16% of expenditures are going towards information systems, and the little blue bars are the amount that's being spent on outsourcing those services. Not all institutions are outsourcing, but for those that are, about 2.5% are of the money spent on support services are being spent on outsourced services. And this is the first year we're collecting this data, so we're really excited to see where this goes over time, because I know outsourcing is becoming more of an option for institutions. Here's a look at capital versus operating. No big surprise, most of the money spent is on kind of running the trains. It looks like maybe private bachelor's institutions are spending a little bit more on capital expenditures than perhaps other institutions. But when we do our final analysis, we'll be looking at a little bit more whether or not that's the case, if it really is a statistical difference, and if so, why. So let's take a little bit more at what these operating dollars are being spent on in terms of the IT domains. And it looks like there's a decent variety in terms of where institutions are putting their dollars. So public doctoral institutions, it looks like they're maybe spending a little bit more on running the communications infrastructure train. It looks like community colleges are spending a little bit more on support services operating. And information systems are always kind of, looks like they're pretty consistent across the institutions in terms of the amount of money they're spending on just kind of running that train. So let's take a look at the capital expenditures, which is kind of what you're investing in your institution, what you're investing in those services that you're providing. And when we look at public doctoral institutions, it looks like they're really investing in their communications infrastructure. And I'm kind of curious about whether or not that resonates with you and why that might be happening. Perhaps their infrastructure is just a little bit older than others, or they have such big campuses that they need to be spending more dollars on that. So I'll be taking a little bit more of a look at that. And then private doctoral institutions are spending a little bit more on investing in their information systems. So this kind of gives you, so these graphs should be used for you to just kind of keep in the back of your mind to see if your institution type compares to, or your institution compares to the statistics that are presented here. And that's the purpose of core data is, does your situation compare to the group? And if it doesn't, is that a good or a bad thing? And that's kind of the practice of benchmarking. We've also started collecting this year two metrics that we think are maybe a good best practice for you to keep in your mind as you're managing your service. One is, where are your dollars going in terms of institutional mission? Are you spending more on teaching and learning, or are you spending more on administrative services? And are you spending more on administrative services than your peers? And if so, then is that a good thing or a bad thing? And should you be changing your model a little bit? So we're seeing, this is, again, very preliminary statistics, but it looks like about 53% of the expenditure dollars are spent on administrative services at the university level, and 39% are being spent on teaching and learning. And then research, it may or may not be at your institution, so if it is, it's probably around 4%. And this is a pretty small data set. As you can see, I didn't break this out across Carnegie class because we just didn't have the cell sizes big enough to do that type of analysis, so there might be some error in this slide. Another really good rule of thumb metric to start collecting is whether or not the dollars you're spending are on running the trains, growing your IT department, or transforming your institution. So are you trying to spend money to take your institution to the next level? Are you investing in a new technology? Are you providing a new service that's putting you at the cutting edge? That's the transform dollars. And this is a metric that's researched by Gartner. And so they have industry statistics. They have metrics that you can compare your institution to other industries if you're interested in that. And so the breakdown we have here is, I checked with the latest Gartner report, and it just does seem to be comparable with what Gartner is gathering in terms of higher education spending. So most of the dollars are being spent to run the trains. And in other industries, that's not the case. Far fewer dollars are being spent running the institution. So let's take a look now at where your staff is in terms of proportions. I didn't even call out any statistics on this graph because it looks pretty similar across the board. Lots of big chunks of people dedicated towards support services. Then the next kind of big group of people, staff that you have, is probably on educational technology services. And then there's a decent chunk of people being devoted to information systems. And that seems pretty similar across the board. Another metric I really like to produce is IT staff per 1,000 institutional FTEs. So if you have 5,000 institutional FTEs, you can multiply the IT support services metric by 5. And that's about the number of IT support services that your peers probably have, IT support services FTEs that your peers probably have. So you can kind of benchmark against that statistic and see if you're right on par with them. So there's around 3 FTE or per 1,000 institutional FTE in support. Research computing isn't at all institutions, but we find that at the institutions it's a little bit lower. And I'm calling out the ones that my co-presenters will be discussing because it'll give you some framework for that. And then information security is also like a third of an FTE per 1,000 institutional FTEs. So you can keep these in the back of your mind in terms of like a rule of thumb metric. And then on top of those FTEs, we also started collecting this year the proportion of effort dedicated to your services that's that is supplemented by outsourced staff. So in addition to the three FTEs that per institutional, 1,000 institutional FTE that's dedicated to support services, most institutions are also providing an additional FTE worth of effort with outsourced services. And that wraps up the financials and staffing portion of today's talk. I'm going to hand it off to Sue now, and she's going to give you the highlights for IT support.
Thanks, Leah. I learned a few things in that slideshow, so that's good to know. So Module 2, which is the IT support services module of the Core Data Survey, is actually the first year for that module standing alone was in 2011. There were some legacy support issues that were in other items in Module 1, I think, prior to 2011. So, you know, we're just now trying to be able to establish a trend. We're just now getting enough data points to start that trending information. So, again, as Leah said, we use preliminary data here in order to look at some of the things that are happening. These are the topics that are covered in Module 2. You see a lot of help desk kinds of data that's being collected, knowledge management, accessibility, supplemental, and then some feedback. So those are the kind of topics that are covered in Module 2. So I'm going to go through some use cases with you quickly just to let you know some of the things that you might ask yourself or be able to get information from the Core Data Survey. So, you know, one thing that's always interesting is where is support being provided? Which units? So you can see here, it's very consistent over the last 3 years. About 75% of the support is through the central IT organization. And, you know, 22 to 23% is shared between central IT and some other academic unit or administrative unit. Now we can say also which organization provides the help desk support. So again, it's very consistent over the years, over the 3 years of data that we have. And again, it's mostly out of the central IT organization and then shared between academic and distributed organizations. How much is spent on IT support? And you can see the difference here in operating and capital. Support is a very human intensive and kind of activity. So there's a lot of dollars that are spent just in the operating costs of keeping the support services running. So this is percentage of the total operating expenditures. And if you bring out support of that, it's 17%, as Leah said, which actually I'm going to use that number because that's higher than I thought it would probably be overall most institutions. And again, if you break that out a little bit further, in-house support is 95% and outsourced is 5% of the operating expenditures. And if we start to look at FTE, you can see how this trends. You can see the 2013 IT support services staff FTE in total is the largest. You have the desktop computing support and help desk staff. So you can use this data to compare to your own instance and see how this does help or hurt you, I guess. Are schools providing BYOD support? That's one thing that a lot of people want to know, and you can see 34% is providing for institutional systems. A small percentage is only for personally owned systems, and then the larger percentage is for both institutionally and personally owned systems. So you can see education's been doing BYOD for a long time, so that's not really been news to us, I think. But, you know, there's a big percentage of schools that are, in fact, providing support to the BYO environment. One of the things I always want to know is, are more schools turning to self-help? How can we leverage and be more efficient with the services and resources that we have? And you can see here the lines are red. I think they kind of show up as red here. you can see, you know, most everybody provides phone support, email, walk-in is around there. But you can start to see the self-help, the self-service FAQ, self-service portal, and wiki. You know, those percentages start going down. And so I think, you know, if this was me looking at this and analyzing this, I would be saying, you know what, there's a lot of self-help out there. People are used to helping themselves now. We can start to use that technology to bolster those numbers. We can also look at support services by university classification. And so this is for walk-in phone and email, which you probably would guess that almost everyone does provide that. Here's web form, remote assistance, and self-service FAQ. So this is more of the self-service kinds of look and feel by institutional class. And then this is chat, instant message, a self-service portal, and social media. So you can see social media is still not caught on too much, except for the BA public. So they have really used social media more than any of the other university classification. Here's also video, self-service wiki, and text message. So again, you can kind of see the BA publics are kind of leading in that text message and more of the use of social media. So here, how are schools using knowledge bases? And again, you can kind of see by university classification who's using what. So if you start to look at the green, which is both for internal and self-service use, you can see the Dr. Public class is using 51%, is using both a knowledge base for internal and for self-service use for the institution. So those are some use cases that might help you as you analyze your own support services. Are most schools providing 24-hour support? Well, with online learning and actually just the general population anymore, people are working 24 hours a day, even if local. And so you can see here the 24/7, the bar on the left is actually hours. So 168 hours is 24/7. And you can see that actually it went down just a tiny bit in 2013 over the past 2 years. But most are not providing 24/7 support. So that might be something interesting to you. Again, by classification, of course, the doctorate private schools are providing more hours of support than anyone else. Are schools providing mobile support? And so this is kind of interesting, I think. You know, we looked at this by iPad, iPhone, so by platform, and you can see, you know, that most are just providing best effort. If they can help you, they will. If they can't, they won't. And so this is going to be interesting, I think, to watch over the next couple of years to see if this actually changes. I would expect that full support, that blue line, to begin to increase further as more and more mobility comes into play here. Here's another look at that, just the trends and the percentages over by platform. So there's a ECAR research bulletin on IT support. This one is just an example. This was about the BYOE, which is everything, bring your own everything era. This was published for the 2012 data. And so if you'd like to learn more there, you can learn more at the ECAR Research Bulletin. So I'm going to turn that over to Michelle.
Thanks, Sue. Okay, I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about research computing statistics. This is module 4 of the survey. And I'll say that this is probably one of the more challenging modules to consider what do we want to measure when it comes to research computing. And so a couple years ago when EDUCAUSE was sort of rethinking the core data survey, we took the opportunity to sort of zero in particularly on this module to think about if and how it could be reshaped. What kinds of things do we really want to measure with this module? And so part of my role in this process was to reach out to my colleagues at schools that have, you know, research as part of their mission to get input on metrics, things that we're interested in, what do we want to compare to each other, and then take that and working with the CDS group, figuring out how to turn those into questions that we could collect some data around. And so we took the opportunity to rework that module, keeping in mind that we had to sort of bridge the old and the new, so we needed some consistency in the data, knowing that we might be starting over in some of those areas, and also realizing that we might still have some gaps. So part of what we're assessing or will assess coming up this next year is, what did we collect? What did we wish we should have collected, and what should we collect going forward? So you might have thoughts on that. We're certainly open to hearing your feedback as we kind of go through what's here, and maybe even as you use it yourself. And I think part of the question for us in the research arena is what really constitutes maturity in this space? And that's a pretty big question. And we've got tidbits of it today, but that's sort of the broader context for us as we think about how we measure our success there and really how we compare across institutions. So as most of you know who are in research schools or schools with research as part of their mission, research is probably one of the most decentralized IT functions on campus. And so that provides an interesting context when we think about what we collect. In this module, we did end up looking at some of the fairly traditional categories of information. You know, how do we compare centrally to decentral in terms of where the resources are and the investments? What kinds of service and support are institutions providing? What kinds of capabilities are there for researchers in terms of high-performance computing and compute cycles and visualization services and things like that? And then how are we investing? How much are we investing in this arena, and how does that compare to other schools? And then, you know, there's other ways to compare in terms of maturity models that are starting to hit the scene. And, of course, ECAR has been doing some research around this, and the outcomes of that have been distributed in various articles over the last couple of years. So I'll go through some of the data. I found some of this to be quite interesting, I'll say, and even as I listen to my colleagues, I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. So kind of really intrigued by the data here. You've seen this slide with the prior components here, but you'll notice that research computing comparatively is really at about a 1% level when it comes to operating expenditures. I think that's fairly on par with us at the University of Arizona. And then when you break that down, it's 1%. And then from there, most of those expenditures are on campus. So it's pretty much an in-source or in-house type of operation. There's a little sliver there of the expenditure or the operation that is externally focused. And it's unclear whether we'll start to see some changes in this arena. So I thought this was interesting. This is a trend showing, how support is provisioned and how that has sort of progressed over the last few years. And I think the one that I found to be the most interesting out of this was the integrated set of IT services. Integrated meaning integrated in a sort of a co-support structure in terms of central to decentral, and the significant uptick of that over the last couple of years. And so we're seeing some increase in that kind of arrangement. The planning, of course, side of that, in contrast, has come down. So maybe a few years ago, people were planning to work on that, to create a more integrated set of services, and they've actually executed on that. And so you see kind of the difference in the two data points there, with the most being unchanged in terms of the independent level of support. So we're integrating, but yet units are still providing their own support to some degree, which it reflects well to how research computing is provisioned. So this gives you a sense of which units are responsible for computing, kind of to the prior slide, from a percentage perspective. You can see the biggest categories there are primarily central IT and then shared between central IT and administrative units. And then, of course, that plots out across the different categories of institution. And so you can get a pretty good sense there. For the doctoral publics, 48% of the support is some kind of an integrated or shared type structure in that arena, with 30% really being a primarily central service. Diving into that a little bit more in terms of trending, how have those shifted? How have those categories shifted over the last 3 years? Not a lot is basically what this is showing. The central IT and the shared has pretty much been consistent over the last several years in terms of the breakdown on who's doing what. The other part that I found interesting in these, and we'll take a little bit of a deep dive in a minute, but I found that bottom statistic, the 22% to 26% of not applicable or no organizational unit responsibility, is an interesting data point for me. Okay, so what kinds of services are being provisioned out of the central IT units? The big functions there are consulting for storage solutions and data access. And then the other area is consulting for high-performance computing and configuration. That's very much on par for how our organization operates. Our central IT unit, one of their most primary focus is to support a high-performance computing environment and consulting with the researchers in use of that environment, and then helping them sort of translate that into some of their local work. Visualization, maybe some statistical analysis. So that trends nicely with what we're seeing at our school. Some other functions in terms of what's being done in a shared type environment are those functions that are primarily a shared with a shared structure. Reviewing and approval of technical aspects of the projects. So. Things like, is the technical configuration appropriate? Do we have security configurations included? So that's being done jointly with the central unit as well as with those folks in the departments who are closest to the researchers. The security planning, you know, that's been an uptick item anyway in terms of requirements from grant programs. More and more grant programs or the agencies want to know, are you keeping the data safe? And we want to know how you're doing that. And so the research community or the decentral side of that equation has been relying a little bit more on the central units to help make those judgments and assessments. And then, of course, hosting or facilitating events to introduce new technologies. There's some activity going on there in the shared sense. Work being done primarily in the units, not so much centrally. This gives you a feel for what kind of work is taking place there. Assistance in preparing research grant applications is probably, you know, as you can see, one of the biggest items. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, the technical folks out in the units are typically RAs or research assistants, and so they're there to help the researchers prepare their grant applications and the materials. They're also the ones there analyzing the data, doing some of the statistical computing, and then being involved in coming up with the data management plans and the details and managing to those plans going forward. So that gives you a sense of what folks in the units are doing and how it compares accordingly. And then in terms of the items that are primarily not provided or have kind of the biggest statistics here, the consulting support for visualization, the consulting support for access to federally funded research resources, cloud computing, and then consulting for software development and software porting. And so this gives you a sense of what those activities are looking like or not looking like. Okay, let's see here. Oh, here we go. And so one of the other categories of the third category that I talked about collecting data on is just performance. What are we provisioning for our researchers? What kinds of environments are they able to leverage in their research? And as you can see here, and as is typical, the central units, if you're making investments there, typically have the systems with the greater capabilities. And that's certainly the case on our campus, simply because we're able to, you know, from an institutional perspective, make the kind of investment to really put in a robust system. So, you know, how much are they going to be able to use? How much RAM do they have access to in terms of their compute and processing power? And then compute cores and GPU cores tends to be another area that we like to compare to with each other in terms of performance and capabilities. And what's interesting here is that every time we refresh our computing environment, you know, we sort of bump ourselves up on the capability and capacity list, and I think it lasts maybe a couple of days, and then somebody else, you know, upgrades, you know, their environment. And so it's like this continually changing environment in terms of what you purchase and how long it takes to really utilize that, and then, you know, how far it's moving, how quickly it's moving in that space in terms of really provisioning more power. And that in my view correlates well with just what we're seeing in the big data space. Lots of data, lots of compute requirement, visualization requirement, and that puts pressure on things like this in terms of making sure we have the right equipment to support that kind of processing. And now we're going to move into information security with Joanna Grama.
Good morning. I am here to talk to you this morning about what is the best CDS module. That would be the module on information security. I'm sorry. You shouldn't play favorites, but I do have a favorite. Module 7 focuses on information security and includes questions about IT security organizations, staffing, policy, and information security practices. And so while institutions aren't required to complete Module 7, the data gathered in Module 7 can help you compare the depth of your information security program to that of your peers. And it is my favorite module. Again, you've seen this slide already, so I'm not going to spend much time on it, but I am going to talk about the very small amount of operating expenditures that are spent on information security. And from this preliminary data in CDS, we learned that about 2% of the operating expenses for our reporting schools are spent on information security. If you include identity management practices in with that information security number, it rises to 3%. And I think that's important to remember because some schools do include their IDM practices in their information security organization. When we look at a finer slice of those expenditures, about 6% of them are on information security outsourcing activities, and the bulk are on providing information security in-house. And I just wanted to give you a sense of what those numbers look like in the data that we've collected in CDS. The median amount of expenditures is $81,000. Our 25th percentile is $15,000, but the 75th percentile is $250,000. So that really runs a wide range of operating expenditures made on information security. One of the fascinating questions in CDS is where is information security functionally functionally located in your institution? Where does it report? And the reason why this question is important is because information security is really a unique discipline. It's got a technical aspect, it's got a business process aspect, it's got a common sense aspect. So it is in itself both a domain area and a strategy. And where that's located can be really important for your institution. We see in our CDS results this year that functional responsibility for information security lies primarily in central IT. The next largest chunk is responsibility is shared between central IT and another organization on campus, and that could be an academic or an administrative organization. And then after that, there's kind of a pretty steep drop off in terms of where that responsibility might be located. If you've got a large multi-school campus, that your information security practices might be located in your system office. And then there's also a very small percentage of information security responsibilities that is outsourced. So I think that's just really interesting. This is that same responsibility question, but sliced by Carnegie class. There's not a lot of variation among the different Carnegie classes. You can see that for its baccalaureate private institutions that have the largest amount of information security responsibility located in their central IT offices, and then the smallest class of institutions is the public doctorals with only 87%. And I think that we can make some inferences about that. We know about the large and perhaps distributed nature of our public doctoral institutions, whereas perhaps there's a more controlled environment in the private baccalaureate institutions. So, trending information, that is one of the most important reasons to participate in CDS, because you really can get a look at the backwards view in terms of what has happened historically, and then you can also use that a bit to prognosticate about the future. Not a lot of change in information security reporting structure. It stays pretty high at 90% for the last 3 years in terms of central IT having responsibility for that function. So now we're getting into the meat of Module 7. And one of the best things about Module 7 is it asks about information security practices. So what are those information security practices that your institution engages in, and how do you engage in those activities? Do you handle it from your central organization, or is it a shared responsibility? Module 7 asks about 31 different information security practices. Those practices were vetted in front of the Higher Education Information Security Council, which is a council of our peers who are affiliated both with EDUCAUSE and with Internet2. They're information security professionals, and they looked at these practices. The practices really run the gambit from technical information security practices to what you might call the softer side of information security, which is training and awareness activities. They also include my favorite activities, which are the legal issues in information security. So how are you approaching your regulatory compliance issues? One of the best ways to use this particular question in Module 7 is to assess the depth of your information security program. When you're looking at this data for your own school and you're comparing yourself to your peers, do you see any gaps in the list of activities that are provided and what you're doing at your institution? So you've had a ton of time to look at this slide. It compares 2012 data to 2013 data, and these are the top three activities that are handled by your central IT unit. And you can see from the slide, it's network segmentation, firewall operation and management, and NAC. And what this tells us, and what you can look at when you look at the bigger list of activities that are handled in the central IT department, is that our central IT departments are mostly responsible for implementing technical information security controls. Those are those controls that need to be implemented in the hardware and software of our information systems, and they're really controls that work best for the institution when they're deployed along our whole network. It's not necessarily just departmental protection, it's protection for the whole institution, and you can really see that in the trending data for CDS, that the technical controls are implemented centrally. Moving right along to shared information security responsibility, there is that 7% chunk of information security that is a shared function, so shared between the central IT unit and another IT unit. And this is the trending slide, and you can see it's very, very stable, the amount of responsibility that is shared. And I think that this is a little bit interesting, actually. I've been hearing a lot in EDUCAUSE sessions over the past day and a half about outsourcing and cloud sourcing and centralized versus decentralized. And I'm kind of wondering, because it's so stable in the information security arena, if information security, if we didn't get it right the first time in terms of where it's located and where functional responsibility lies. And I wouldn't be surprised, because as you know, the information security people are brilliant. That was a joke. It's time to laugh. Probably not. When we look at shared information security practices, the numbers don't change much from 2012 to 2013, and the top three practices have stayed the same. And I think what's really interesting about the shared practices is we're starting to look more outside of technical controls and into administrative controls. And administrative controls in the information security world are those types of controls that are responding to regulatory requirements, to compliance requirements, and to our own institutional policies and procedures. Administrative controls also tend to require an awful lot of collaboration and cooperation in order to be successful. And that's why you see that information security and privacy regulatory compliance, PCI compliance, and information risk management are very, very high on this list. And that's because those are areas that require a lot of collaboration in order to do successfully. And I didn't want to neglect outsourced information security activities, even though the numbers are so terribly small. And again, another reason why CDS is important is even though the numbers are small, we can look at trending data over time to make some guesses about what might happen in the future. So 0, 0, and 1. Due to the magic of rounding, those numbers are actually 0.4, 0.4, and 0.87, so they are very, very small. The top outsourced information security activities, information security professionals won't find these listed activities very surprising at all. Penetration testing, scanning of web applications for vulnerabilities, and scanning of your network for vulnerabilities. These are typically validation activities. They're activities that an information security department or an institution might engage in order to validate the effectiveness of their information security efforts. Penetration testing in particular is a technique that you use where you might have an external company, for lack of a better word, come in and try to hack your system and see if they can get at your sensitive systems or your sensitive data. If they can't, you're doing a really fine job. If they can, you might want to go back to that operating expenditure slide and start making your case for perhaps more investment in information security. Forensic analysis is also in the list of outsourced activities, although the percentage did fall a little bit this year, from 8% to 5%. I'm not terribly surprised that forensic analysis activities are outsourced, because it is an area that requires special training and skill, and it might particularly be outsourced in the events that forensic analysis is required, because you need to respond to a criminal investigation or some type of other investigation where following recognized legal procedures is very important. Finally, the last slide, and a really, really interesting slide. One of the questions that Module 7 asks about is information security risk assessments, whether you're performing them at your institution and in what areas in which you're performing them. And I worked with a co-author from Purdue University this year on a research bulletin focusing on the information risk assessments question, and we were very positive and enthusiastic, because at the end of 2012, it looked like risk assessment use was going up, and we hypothesized that this was a great thing, that it helped us understand our threats and vulnerabilities to our information systems, and it allowed institutions to prioritize their response. And because the use of risk assessments was going up, that was a good thing for information security. The early results in 2013 aren't perhaps quite that rosy. And in fact, we see that the use of risk assessments has gone down in our preliminary results, and that schools are actually answering in the affirmative that they're not conducting any risk assessments at all. I don't think that there's reason to panic, because there are still a lot of institutions who need to complete 2013. But this illustrates one of the really, really important reasons to participate in CDS, and that's for the trending data. One of my colleagues at EDUCAUSE, actually Leah, hypothesized that perhaps institutions conduct risk assessments in a two-year cycle, and we're just in the off year. And we'll know that when you complete CDS in 2014 and answer that you're doing risk assessments in your critical information system. So this is my plug to please, if you haven't finished yet in 2013, pay attention to question 11 in Module 7. And if you're planning to participate in 2014, please also pay attention to that question. Thank you.
We only have just a few seconds left, I think, in this session today, and I wanted to tell you that one of the primary reasons institutions participate in Core Data is to get access to our new Core Data reporting service, which is powered by SAS. If you haven't seen this tool, it's a way for you to kind of interact with the data that's collected in the survey. And we're running demos today at 10 and 3:30 by EDUCAUSE Central. We have a big screen, and we'll run through a demo of what is new to come in CDS Reporting 2013. And you can ask any question you need to about how the service works. Also, I wanted to tell you, there's lots of other data sources at your fingertips in addition to Core Data. And if you're really interested in getting your hands on free data, we're going to be talking about some ways that you can do that over in 303A right at 9:10 in just a few minutes. So if you want to learn more about information that you can kind of merge together with CDS or use separately from CDS to form a broader picture of what's going on at your institution, you can learn about that then. And now I can take a few questions, I think. Maybe there's 1 minute left if anybody has some questions. Otherwise, I really appreciate you attending. Oh, yep, go ahead. You have to participate to get access, but the survey is still open right now. We're handing out extension requests left and right. So if you're still interested in getting access, the benefit also of participating year to year to year is that you get your answers from the previous year to help you complete the survey this year. If you lapse a year, that's a lot harder of a lift to participate in a year. So if you're interested in a request, please, I'll put you on the list. Anyone else? All right, thank you so much for attending today. Enjoy the rest.